The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, September 4th, 2023.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do. Because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. With me at the board is my friend, my partner, and engineer, Ken Martin. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Well, happy Labor Day to everybody. Here it is, the first Monday of September. I can't believe. Where did August go? Where did the year go? It's the first Monday in September, and we are celebrating Labor Day. And believe it or not, the first Labor Day was celebrated in 1848. So this is how long we have been struggling. It's just amazing to me. Well, I'm very excited because today joining me in the studio is a dear friend, Lisa Maldonado. She's a labor representative for the California Nurses Association. Lisa has an extensive background in labor relations and union organizing, and we'll be talking about the history of Labor Day and her involvement and all the other good things that she might add. And I have to add that Lisa Maldonado is also on the board of KBBF, and we're very proud to have her. Well, so many things happening. This weekend was really beautiful. I want to give a shout out to Reuben Scott, who is the chairman of the Community Equity Foundation. They did a wonderful, wonderful festival called the African Soul Festival. It happened in Rohnert Park. I was just amazed to learn about the culture. I had one disappointment, though. I wanted to see more diversity at the event. And one of the things I want to encourage my listeners to do is when you see, like, if the African American community or the Hispanic community or the Chinese community or the Jewish community or any of the communities are having any of these events, what's so wonderful about them is that we can come together, we can gather, and we can get to know one another. You know, I believe the solution to the solution to racism is once we get to know each other. You know, once you know each other, it's like all those things melt. The color melts, the religion melts, the culture melts. You just come together. And I think it is very, very important that we think about that. So a shout out to Reuben Scott and all those wonderful volunteers. I just loved it. I mean, just seeing all the just beautiful material and just seeing and so many women. I mean, once again, women are at the forefront of all this stuff. Another woman I want to send out a big congratulations to, Susan Chunku, whose name has been placed on the Living Peace Wall in Sebastopol, California. Let me tell you a little bit about the Peace Wall. The Peace Wall is a monument of granite panels topped by bronze hippie peace symbol, honors and quotes prominent nonviolence activists and social justice figures. It was created by Michael Gelati in Sebastopol, and his first one was unveiled in October of 2015 in downtown Sebastopol. And no need, self-proclaimed Peacetown USA, and four names are put on every year, and they generally do that in September. And one of my very dear friends that I want to do a shout out to is being put on Peace Wall is my dear friend Susan Chunku. And I want to tell you a little bit about Susan because I think it's so important that we acknowledge the women that are activists that are trying to make a difference in this world. Unfortunately, there needs to be more of us, but Susan has been active. She first became an activist, just like myself, first protesting the war in Vietnam. And it's very interesting when I think about the war in Vietnam and I think about the shooting at Kent State. Those were big eye-openers for me. I'm telling you something. I was not a radical. I used to think that everything was perfect, but boy, that Vietnam War hit, and it just changed many of us. So she first started protesting in the Vietnam War, and in recent years has served on the board as treasurer of the Peace and Justice Center of Sonoma County, co-leading the Sonoma County Peace Press, and tabling activist events for multiple organizations. One of the original advocates for Camp McKella, the Remembrance Village, and she continues to act as a community liaison for the local homeless. amazing homeless people. It's just amazing that she has done so much. So congratulations. Congratulations to Susan Chunko. You know, it's an honor well deserved. A shout out. I want to do a shout out to the National Women's History Alliance celebrating 43 years of bringing women's history to the world. A special thank you and congratulations to co-founder and executive director Molly Murphy McGregor. An amazing accomplishment. And I got to tell you a little rumor. Rumor has it that Molly's going to retire in December, but that's yet to be seen. You know, she's been retiring ever since I know her, you know, and she just, her and the group brought just such an amazing thing to Sonoma County and to the whole country, to the world, and that's women's history. I remember when Molly and I were going to Sonoma State together and we were taking a walk, and she starts talking to me about women in art. And I said, Molly, are there women artists? You know, I mean, that's how ignorant we were, and that's how hidden women were. I mean, the only woman I think I knew about Amelia Earhart. And I think that was about really the only woman that sticks in my mind. But boy, now I know about many, many, many women, and my goodness, women have made such a contribution. So happy birthday, 43 years of really a positive thing, bringing women's history into the schools so young girls can have a sense of pride. You know, I went to Hollenbeck Junior High School, and I had to take a class called Practice House. And I had to learn how to cook, and they had me make an apron. And I'll tell you something, I could not make an apron. Now when I look back on it, it was my way of resisting. I had to make an apron and a pot holder. And I remember my dear Auntie Dodo, she ended up making it for me because I just could not do it. So happy birthday and congratulations, 43 years of great success for women in history. Well, here's a really wonderful note, a special happy birthday to my beautiful great-granddaughter, Satori Trinity Jensen, who turns 5 years old on September 6th. Trinity, my goodness, what a middle name. I can hardly believe that 5 years has passed, and she's already playing soccer. It's in kindergarten. I mean, can you imagine at 5 years old they already got women playing soccer? It's the world has changed. And, you know, it's so interesting that she's playing soccer. When I was at Sonoma State, it was so interesting. A letter came to the Women's Studies Department about a young woman who wanted to play football. Well, I'm not an advocate of women playing for football, but I am an advocate for choice. So if someone chooses that's what they want to do, that's their choice, and I support that 1,000%. But back then, women could not play football. They could not play in sports. I think the only thing we were allowed to play was maybe volleyball and tennis. I'm not sure. Maybe bowling. But I think it's just amazing that here we are in 2023 it's just amazing. It's just amazing that to hear this little girl, 5 years old, playing soccer. I am grateful, to tell you the truth, to live this long that I can become a great-grandmother. You know, in the Native traditions, the great-grandmothers really had a voice, and I hope that people hear my voice and they step up and step out and stand up for what's right. What's right for the children. Like I say all the time, the children are our future, and we must never lose sight of that. Well, like I said, today is the first Monday of September, which today is International Labor Day. Let me give you just a little bit of history. Labor Day is a federal holiday in the United States celebrated on the first Monday in September to honor and recognize the American labor movement and the work and contributions of labor to the development and achievement of the United States. You know, we have some people that are in some, particularly women that are in some amazing jobs, amazing paying jobs. You know, you have to take a moment today and thank the ancestors, the ones whose shoulders you are standing on, that created these movements, that made it possible for many, many people to have a decent wage. I mean, unfortunately, things have changed. But boy, when I was growing up, we were definitely middle class. And my father was a union man, and it really proved itself over and over. Well, the three-day weekend, it's called the Labor Day weekend. By the time it became an official holiday in 1894, 30 states in the United States officially celebrated Labor Day at the beginning. Oh, I made a mistake. It was 1894 that they had the first, actually. I said 1848. But boy, here's my notes. I'm glad I've got them. And you know, what we do every Monday, We do. Our history is our strength. Well, why do we do that? Because we need to remember the accomplishments that women have made. We have to understand whose shoulders we're standing on. And my hope is the more we know, the more courage women get. I mean, we're going to be talking to Lisa Maldonado, who's a union organizer. And let me tell you something. It takes a lot of courage for a woman to stand up for labor. You know, I mean, it's getting more and more frequent. You know, more and more you see more and more women involved. But at one time, I mean, when we look at the labor, just with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when he first started the labor committee, I guess that's the call. And the first woman, Frances Perkins, who brought us Social Security, children's labor rights. You know, children used to work in the factories as young as 5 years old. You know, by the time they were 10 years old, they already had arthritis in their body. I mean, when you think of what women have done in the labor market, it is amazing. And Frances Perkins was amazing. And what her heart was, is that she saw the Triangle Fire. She was a social worker and she was walking home and all of a sudden she is in front of this factory that's burning and women are jumping out of the windows because there was no union, there was no labor regulations. And actually the women were locked in because they did not want them to go out until they finished sometimes their 14, 15, 16-hour day. You know, all you folks out there that are working 8 hours a day, thank labor for that. Thank those unions who struggled. My father told me in Chicago he literally had a policeman put a stick right over his head. And why was he being beaten? Because he wanted fair treatment for workers. It's been a struggle, and it continues to be a struggle. So happy Labor Day to everybody. Anyway, like we always do, our history is our strength, and I have three very strong women who are celebrating their birthday. They have passed on, who are all labor organizers, all part of the movement. But before I do that, I want to acknowledge this woman was born on September 2nd, 1948. She made her transition in 1986, and that was Christy McCliff. She was a New Hampshire teacher, and she was selected in 1985 to be the first teacher in space. And she died aboard the Space Shuttle Challenger. So my condolences to her family, and a thank you to her for doing this very, very innovative thing by taking the risk of going into space. And another woman that I think is very important, that's Marguerite Higgins. She was born September 3rd, 1920, and she made her transition in 1966. This is amazing. She was the first woman to win a Pulitzer Prize for international reporting in 1951 for coverage of the Korean War. And when I did research on Marguerite Higgins, I found out that she actually was on the battlefield reporting. Amazing, amazing to acknowledge this woman. And, you know, these are really special, special birthdays now, because these are women who made an impact on the labor movement, at least brought things to attention. The first woman was born in September 3rd, 1921, and she made her transition in 1985, and that's Ruth Orkin. Now, she has another story, because she was denied admission to the Cinematographers Union because she was a woman. So I would look at Lisa and say, we've come a long way, huh, baby? She's shaking her head. Now, the second woman that I want to talk to, this must have been a woman that had a feisty, a feisty temperament. She was born September 4th, 1906, and she made her transition in 1988. Oh, Elaine Yoda. Well, I like that. You know, Elaine means light, so she really lit up a lot. She was the first labor organizer, listen to this, with the International Longshoremen's Union. Can you imagine? I can just imagine this woman with all these big men. She argued for free daycare for women. We still haven't got free care, and equal pay for equal work in the 1930s. And she interned in 1942 with her Japanese husband because she felt family should stay together. So here's a woman who was working with the longshoremen, you know, the longshore people, helping to form this union. At the same time, had an integrated marriage, and her husband was interned, and she believed that the family had to stay together, so she went to the camp. And, you know, that's a dark day in history. that that happened. And then finally, this is really interesting. This is the very, very interesting. This is on this woman was born on September 8th, 1945, and she made her transition in 1995, and that was Esther Rome. Now, this is just a little bit different, not necessarily union, but this was something that women came together and did something that was phenomenal. I was going to Sonoma State from 1973 to 1975, and I remember what happened because 13 women created the Boston Women's Health Book Collection, the basis for the groundbreaking health manual, Our Bodies, Our Self, which provided accurate information on women's health. And I'll never forget when it hit the streets and I was at Sonoma State. We all bought it. We had a class called Our Bodies, Ourselves. It was an amazing, amazing experience. And I want you to know something. I did not even recognize what my body was all about until that class. I mean, I knew I had a body. But it was just this feeling of all of a sudden looking at your body, looking at who you are as a woman, looking at your how you are the one who brings forth life and the different things that we go through just to bring birth. You know, it was amazing. I myself personally, I mean, they were all talking about in 1973, they were talking about they're going to have, you know, everybody's going to have natural birth and, you know, they're going to have the children drop out into the water. And I'm listening. I had a cesarean. And all of a sudden, I stood up in class one day and I said, am I inadequate? And the teacher asked me, what are you talking about? I says, I had a cesarean. I didn't have a natural birth. And that started a whole conversation about the dangers of having a child, about how important it is to be able to have issues like having a cesarean versus having natural birth, that the most important thing is you bring that child forward. And we have many, many ways now that we do it. And we save more and more children as time goes on. And it's also what's so interesting, too. My daughter was a daughter of choice. And again, I want to say the most important thing we can have as women's, and that's one thing that Our Bodies, Ourselves taught us, is that we need to have choice. That is so important for us. Well, folks, that's a lot to think about. But you know, that's what Women's Spaces is all about. I want all you women out there thinking and standing up. And you know, also, you know, I remember when I was going to school on my kindergarten report card, they wrote the thing called Elaine should remember that children should be seen and not heard. Well, I don't think I really paid attention to that, but it was devastating. I remember my mother reading it. And, you know, those days are gone. As women, we have to stand up, and the louder the better, because we are losing a lot of our rights if we're not careful. Our daughters are not going to have the same privileges that we had. You know, they're going to come after abortion. The next thing, they're going to come after all those tattoos these young people have on their bodies. You know, that's a result of the fact that women should have been said, we have a right to choice. We have a right to, oh, we have dominion over our own bodies. That was a big statement, a huge statement. And the second statement was to vote for who you think is. You don't have to vote because how your boyfriend's voting or how your husband's voting. So these were two amazing things that came forward to me in 1973 when I first entered women's studies at Sonoma State. In fact, this right now, I want to say hello and congratulations and just send my love over the airs to my teacher, Ann Neal. She changed my life. So hi, Ann, if you're listening. Well, that's a lot to think about, but that's what Women's Spaces is all about. Get us all thinking, get us all revved up a little bit. Well, we're going to take a musical break now, and the song I'm going to be playing is called Bella Chow. It's sung by Betsy Rose and the Women's Chorus. And when we return, I will be talking to Lisa Maldonado, who is a representative for the California Nurses Association. Lisa has an extensive background in labor relations and union organizing, and we'll be talking about the history of May 1st and her involvement in the labor relations. Excuse me, we're going to be talking about Labor Day and her involvement in the labor movement. And just to let you know, Bella Chow is an old union song. I mean, it's been around for a long, long time, and I think it's starting to come about again. I hear it played quite a bit. But right now, the unions are on the move, and I think this is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful song. So let's go ahead, Ken, and play that. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Lisa Maldonado.
We are women, and we are marching. marching for liberation. We want to change our world right now. Oh, we are artists and we are weaving. Oh, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow, Chow. We are weaving for liberation. We want to change our world right now. Oh, we are children and we are dreaming. Oh, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow, Chow. We are dreaming for liberation. We want to change our world right now. Oh, we are poets and we are singing. Oh, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow, Chow. We are singing for liberation. We want to change our world right now. We are lovers and we are longing. Oh, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow, Chow. We are longing for liberation. We want to change our world right now. Oh, we are mothers and we are caring. Oh, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow, Chow. We are caring for liberation. Change our world right now. Oh, we are fathers and we are crying. Oh, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow, Chow. We are crying for liberation. We want to change our world right now. Oh, we are citizens and we are voting. Oh, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow, Chow. We are voting for liberation. We want to change our world right now.
Wow, that is an old one, an old song. You just kind of, I can just feel it, you know, the women marching. I can just feel it when I listen to that song. It's amazing. Well, for you just joining, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, and Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. That's my last name, Holtz. Boy, it's a hard name to pronounce sometimes. Without further ado, I want to introduce my guest and dear friend. Joining me in the studio is Lisa Maldonado, Labor Representative for the California Nurses Association. Welcome, Lisa. Welcome to Women's Spaces. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you, Elaine. It's great to be here.
Yeah, here we are celebrating another. Lisa has been a regular for the last several years. She's my Labor Day guest, and she always has so much good information to give all of us, and I just really appreciate her.
I love spending Labor Day with you.
Anyway, I'd like to tell the folks just a little bit about you, Lisa. Is that okay?
Sure.
Well, Lisa Maldonado, and I love how she describes herself. She's an attorney, a union thug, a troublemaker, a boat rocker, revolutionary, and a nice Mexican girl all in one. Well, I wanted you to know that I grew up in East L.A., so I know Mexican girls, and they are pretty tough. So she really stands out for me. She's a former executive director for the North Bay Labor Council at AFL-CIO, former director of the SEIU Local 1021. Also, she has previously, a while back, worked as field director of the ACLU of Northern California, where she coordinated a field campaign issues such as racial profiling, death penalty, marriage equality, and immigrants' rights. And it's so amazing we're still fighting. I mean, it feels like, you know, I'm 83 years old, and I've been in this working with women's movement for almost 50 years now, and I it's just amazing. She served as campaign coordinator for the California Faculty Association and the political director of the San Mateo Central Labor Council. Lisa has a degree in political science from San Francisco State University, which is my alma mater also, and a JD from the University of San Francisco Law School. And I know she's just a fabulous aunt and a wonderful friend and a wonderful, wonderful person to know. Anything else that you'd like to add?
Oh, my God. Well, just except I think you mentioned earlier, I'm really proud to be on the board of KBBF, which is community radio, and does you guys all do amazing work. And I'm also on the board of the Great and Day Labor Center in Grayton, and the Imaginist Theater Collective in my spare time, which is a local bilingual theater company here in Santa Rosa.
Amazing. I didn't know that you were part of the Grayton Labor Center. I use them often.
Yeah, they're fabulous. I use them too. People should definitely give them a call if you need work.
But what's good about, one of the things I like about the Grayton Labor is that they'll call you up afterwards and ask you how it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really, you know, it's so important in this world, what I'm recognizing, is to feel that you're cared about, that someone wants to do a good job for you, you know, and that makes it even more worthwhile.
Well, and speaking of tremendous women, Christy Lubin, who was one of the folks who, you know, former executive director of the Grayton Day Labor Center, and helped get that going, was also one of the co-founders of the UndocuFund, which, as you know, during the fires, a lot of people who were undocumented could not get any kind of help or support. Other people, some people had insurance, some people didn't. And so we created UndocuFund to have a place so that people could get support or some kind of reparations for any damages. And it was also, it's grown and it's doing really well now.
But once again, a woman decides, she says, that we got to take care of business, we got to get health care for people. I mean,
that's Christy, yeah.
It's amazing. But one of the things about doing Women's Faces is I interview so many ordinary women that are doing extraordinary things, and you begin to realize what a force we are.
Yeah.
You know, and that we have to recognize that. That's why not to be afraid to stand up. You know, you're standing on the shoulders of so many great women.
Very true. It's very true in the labor movement, and I think in most of our personal lives too, right? Our mothers and our grandmothers were our first inspiration in terms of what we could do and watching what they did.
Oh, talking about grandmothers, you know, it's so interesting because my grandmother came from Russia. And her story is she traveled with her mother and her sister with 3 loaves of bread. Each one had a loaf of bread. I mean, I think the passage was about 4 or 5 weeks. I just found out there was actually a ship they built that they could bring these immigrants over for 6 days. They've sailed. But my grandmother told that story, but when she got to America, she kissed the ground. Mm-hmm. She said when she saw the Statue of Liberty, she said she never had a feeling like that. She said, I'm free. And people have to recognize that. And there are forces today that are trying to take that away from us. And we're all immigrants, and we must remember that to the core of our being.
Well, in the labor movement, immigrants and the story of immigrants is the story of labor, right? Because so many immigrants came and here to work and were exploited, but then became union members and became ardent activists. Emma Goldman, you know, there's all kinds of history of labor women who were also immigrants. Dolores Huerta, you know, this is the story.
On and on.
Yeah.
And looking at the male side, I mean, my father was born in Poland. You know, and he even said when he came, he thought America was free. And when all of a sudden he's striking and he gets banged on the head, he said, oh, my God, where am I?
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Well, Lisa, let's start. Let's get a little personal. Let's get down and personal. Start with telling us how you got involved with unions and in being a representative. What was your motivation? And give one or two examples of people who inspired you. I know you talk about your mother and your grandmother were great influences. But what inspired you? What kind of got you off your duff to do something?
Well, you know, I grew up in a working class family. You know, my dad was a farm worker. He came here from Michoacan, Mexico, when he was a boy. He was 12. And back then, you know, he crossed many times to do all kinds of labor. And I remember he would tell stories about one time how they had picked all the fruit, and then the landowner called the immigration on them so he didn't have to pay them. And the guy from immigration came, the immigration officer, and he knocked on the door of the landowner and he said, okay, I'm taking these guys, but first I want to see you pay them all for their work. And, you know, hearing stories like that, I feel like I always had a pro-worker bias. My grandfather was also a union organizer. He was a cement mason, proud member of the Cement Masons Union. But he also organized cannery workers. My tias were all cannery workers where I grew up in Redwood City. So I think that, you know, my mom was a very strong labor person. She was a California communication worker. She was a telephone operator. And my very first strike, her and my aunt, my tia Yolanda, were both worked for the phone company. Back then, they used to call the phone company Ma Bell. I don't know if you remember that.
How old What's your mother? How old
My mother's 83.
Okay, your mother and I are the same age because I also work for the telephone.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh,
I
my
remember.
God.
Yeah, that was.
And, you know, she told stories there too, right? She told me how, you know, they'd be listening into all your calls. You were timed and how quickly you could get rid of the call. You had to raise your hand to go to the bathroom because, you know, I mean, they were just, it was a very controlled, rigid environment. And she told me that our first strike, I remember my aunt, right? This was, I guess it was late 60s, early 70s. Me and my brother were four, and my aunt had, it was a big contract fight for more pay. And my aunt had put us in T-shirts that said, Ma Bell is a cheap mother.
Oh, God, that's great.
My mom was a little mortified, but we had so much fun on the picket line. Oh, there was candy, there was balloons, there was music. And I think that's when I realized, I mean, since then I've always been, I just feel like I've kind of always been a supporter for people who work. And I saw, you know, I never, like a lot of people, I never believed that lie that if you work hard in this country, oh, you're going to be rich or you're going to whatever. Because I saw that people who worked the hardest had very little. And some people who did no work at all seemed to have a lot. And so I actually... you know, like you said, I was working at the ACLU. I did a lot of work, as a lot of women do, right? Social services. I worked for a feminist collective battered women's shelter in San Mateo, and we ran everything by consensus, which was fun. We had 3-hour meetings with chocolate. Back then, you could smoke, and I remember people would. We had a rule that we could only have one cigarette going at a time in our 3-hour meetings. Ah, the good old days. So. We had chocolate. We had back rubs. We were just, you know, process, process, process. I worked for homeless shelters. I worked for the Haight-Ashbury Family Shelter. And that's kind of when I started to realize my clients, and a lot of them were Latinas. They had no documents, right? So they, you know, I felt like I had to tell my clients, you can't afford to live here. This was in San Francisco, right? You can't afford to live here. You got to move somewhere where you can live. And I realized I was putting Band-Aids on a lot of people. Economically, they needed to make better wages. And I had been working at the ACLU with a wonderful woman, Elaine Ellenson, a fabulous woman who she had worked with United Farm Workers and Dolores Huerta. And she told me, you need to go work in the labor movement. The labor movement needs you. That's where you need to be. And I guess that kind of stuck in my mind because, you know, I have been working. I started my very first job was when I was waiting, you know, I'd taken the bar and was waiting for results. And I started working at the San Mateo Labor Council as the political director, and I thought, oh, my God, this is great. I love this. So, you know, after I passed, I had originally planned to go into death penalty law, right, habeas law, and I did a couple of clerkships. But I fell in love with the labor movement and working with it.
Well, thank God you did, because you have done some amazing things. I want to tell you a little secret about me. You know, I was a union representative when I worked for CETA. I was part of customer client services. I started administrative, and I thought I was going to go to Washington, D.C., and they said you had to have experience with client services. So I went down to client services, and they found out my father was a union man, so they voted me to be the union representative. And I saw what happens with labor. I saw what happens with administration. I saw how they try to pull strings. I mean, and I saw how, well, to make a long story short, I've never gotten a job again at the county.
But I do want to say that I'm really, I love working with the California Nurses Association. I've done, like you said, I've done a lot of union, had a lot of union jobs. But I wanted to work for CNA for a variety of reasons. One is their staunch militant support of Medicare for All. And, you know, when I saw how they took on the governor to get safe patient ratios, in California, and I saw that they're not, the nurses are so strong, they don't back down, they're not afraid to be labeled militant or, you know, they're an active union, and they're a union who fights, they're a union who strikes, and I really saw it and kind of said, I want to be part of that, so I'm really happy.
Well, talk about, you know, when you say you had a fight, you know, talk about, you know, give one or two, you know, you resent, you represent a majority of women right now, you know, and that in itself is a barrier. I mean, you know, there's so much prejudice. I don't know where it comes from. I mean, we're the ones who bring forward the children. You'd think that we would have a little bit more respect. But what are some of the challenges? What are some of the resistors? And what is their logic for not? I mean, especially when my dad went on strike, it was such a simple need, like
well,
a raise.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't like, you know, give me $5,000 a year. It's just
no.
A, you know, something that was reasonable. What are some of the
Well, I mean, when you look at, you know, if you look at corporate America, and unfortunately, right now, medical care is corporate. It's. You know, it's seen as a privilege, something you buy, something, you know, it's not seen as what it should be, right? Which is something that everyone deserves, healthcare. And you have corporations in charge of it who dole it out, limit it. And so there's a lot of, you know, the fights that I do for nurses, with nurses, are usually around those kind of, you know, acts. Because nurses always put their patients first. I mean, that's, you know, their working conditions are our healing conditions. When you go in as a patient, and this is true of a lot of unions, right? So, for example, building trades, if you're, you know, most of us on the outside as patients, we don't know what a procedure should be, right? You go in, you say you're going to have a procedure. I don't know what the standard is medically, what the safest standard is. And a union, having a union nurse, and or same by the same token, in a building, right? I mean, we don't know what the code is or if the building was done safely. We assume. But when you have union workers, they can stand up to the boss, right? If somebody's trying to cut corners or somebody's trying to get away with doing more for less in a way that's not safe, they don't have to be afraid between choosing their job, right, and having a job and speaking up about safety. And so that's one of the things that I see, for example, with nurses, you know, fighting hard for staffing and to have enough staffing. And, you know, because staffing is a labor cost, we see these hospitals trying to limit the labor costs as much as they can in any way they can. And it's a daily fight to make sure that because the nurse is putting her license on the line every time if something goes wrong, and to make sure that the hospital has the resources and the safety and the staff that they need to treat patients, to give patients the best care.
Well, you know, people need to recognize this. You know, I mean, I remember when I was in the hospital. I mean, it was a life and death situation, and the nurses. I mean, the care, and the kindness, and the concern that is shown, and also the knowledge. I mean, the knowledge of knowing what medications to give you. I mean, when you look at some of these wires in these hospitals, I mean, all these wires. These women have to know this,
right?
And
and so many of them do, Elaine. I mean, when you look at stuff like sepsis or infections, nurses have to be in the room looking at you. They have to be able to know, like, you know, 5 minutes ago you sounded great. Now you don't sound so great. Something's wrong. Because, you know, the doctor's not always in the room. And so, you know, that's what one of the things CNA is constantly taking on is the artificial intelligence and trying to use these machines. You know, hospitals are getting more and more into the idea of having, like, robots, right? So you send you home from the hospital with an iPad. Instead of keeping you in the hospital, which, of course, costs them more money, they don't make as much money, they'll send you home after your knee surgery or your whatever with an iPad and somebody to kind of monitor you, through telemetry. That's not a good idea. I mean, for some people it might work, but not for everybody.
Well, you need that, not only is it not a good idea, you know, you need that comfort. You need that woman or that nurse, because they have many male nurses also. It's a male-female business. But the nurse will come and say, it's going to be okay. You know, no, you're okay. It's just right now. This is happening. So there's that reassurance. Well, you know, it's really interesting. You know, I think we're going to take a musical break now, if that's okay with you. And the song I'm going to play, this is, you know, in light of our conversation, you know, every time we have these conversations and I pick these songs, I never realize how appropriate they are, because this song is called Whose Side Are You On? It's a song written in 1931 by activist Florence Reese, who is the wife of Sam Reese, a union organizer for the United Mine Workers in Harlan County, Kentucky. And the Harlan County, it was called Bloody Harlem. I mean, that these people had to go out and fight and fight and fight and fight until they finally got what they needed for the miners. I mean, the mining, I mean, can you imagine having to go in those dark holes, working that hard every single day and not getting a decent wage? No. This was a real fight. So let's go ahead and play that, Ken. And when we come back, we are going to continue my conversation with Lisa Maldonado, who is a representative for California Nurses Union and also is a wonderful human being and who's been in the labor movement for many, many years now.
Which side are you on? 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 Come all you poor workers, good news to you I'll tell. Which side are you on? We're starting our good battle. We know we should win, 'cause we got the gun folks looking very thin. Which side are you on? 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 They say they have to guard us to educate their child. Their children live in luxury, our children almost wild. Which side are you on? 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 Workers, can you stand it? Tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab or take a union stand? Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Side on you all. Don't scare before the bosses, don't listen to their lies. Us poor folks haven't got a chance unless we organize. Which side are you on? 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 Which side are you on?
Well, I often wonder, which side are you on? It's very important when you start thinking about it. Most of us are in the labor force. And, it's very interesting. I was just reading my notes that I want to just add a little bit about this Harlan County War. It was literally a war, and the incidents involved the coal miners and union organizers on one side and coal firms and the law enforcement officials on the other side. And what all of a sudden the big question came into my mind, whose side is law enforcement on? I mean, it's very interesting because law enforcement has a very strong union now. So why would they fight against unions? I mean, it's just amazing. Well, anyway, welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces, and today we are celebrating International Labor Day, and I'm continuing my conversation with Lisa Maldonado, labor representative for the California Nurses Association. And Lisa has an extensive background in labor relations and union organizing, and we are continuing our conversation. So, Lisa, let me ask you this other question. Here it is, the third Monday in September, and we are celebrating Labor Day. Why do you think it's important that every year that we should acknowledge labor? And how do you believe, for me, I don't see acknowledgement of labor. I see advertisement coming, there's a big sale, Labor Day sale, there's Labor Day picnics. I know we're having a breakfast this morning, there's this sale. That I can see, but, they make it like it's a big day to go shopping. So why do you think it's so important that we
The Labor Day is actually not September, first Monday in September is not the real Labor Day, is May 1st, right? International Workers Day. In most of the world, that's, the day. I think, like a lot of United States history, it was different because here they were actually trying to, and the history of the labor movement is the history of repressive tactics, using Pinkerton, using police, using hired thugs or goons to keep labor down.
They're called scabs.
Scabs, too. And one of the reasons that, we have September 1st is this attempt to kind of take Labor Day outside of the more radical, revolutionary May 1st. and turn it into a kind of a more tame holiday. Of course, you know, labor is in a resurgence right now. It's totally growing by leaps and bounds. The nurses, California Nurses Association, we recently went down to Hollywood to be on the SAG-AFTRA strike picket lines to support our brothers and sisters there, Writers Guild.
And that's another. There's another issue about what management. They're trying to get rid of the writers. They're trying to digitalize everything. So the poor writers. I mean, it's crazy.
Exactly, and a lot of people, you know, don't see. You know, most. You know, most of the actors and actresses are trying to just get enough hours and make enough salary to be able to have health care, right? That's a big issue for SAG because you have to have so many hours to be able to get your health care through your union. And this is another reason why nurses are so militant about Medicare for All, because you shouldn't be dependent on your job for health care. Everyone should have health care. And you shouldn't have to fight this hard, because all the money that you fight over, when unions are fighting for health care and who's going to pay health care, that's money that should be going in the workers' pocket, right? That's the money that, instead of who pays, you know, another huge corporation, does the employer pay it or does the employee pay it? Instead, that money should go into the workers' pocket and not to pay, you know, from one transfer from one huge corporation like Disney to another huge corporation like, you know, Sutter or Kaiser. Instead, that money should be actual wages and an increase in benefits. So that's one of the reasons why we went down to support our brothers and sisters. But it's also what we do every day is support other workers, all workers.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you talk about Medicare for All, you know, and the right that as human beings, I mean, we are all children of the earth. I mean, all profit is made from the earth. I mean, we are all inhabitants of this planet that we need to understand and share. And it's so interesting to me that people make such a big deal. Like right now, the Republican Party is saying they want to cut Medicare back more. And who would vote for that? That's what I don't understand. And they call it, oh, it's socialism. You know, it's a social program. And we need social programs. We need Medicare. We need Social Security. We need all these different programs that we have. You know, schools. I mean, all of a sudden, schools are becoming privatized, so all of a sudden this school doesn't give as much education as that school. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, because when everything is monetized, right, and we see it here in the North Bay with housing, right, you know, things that should be basic human rights are monetized. And, you know, it's also exploitation. I mean, the way to find out what creates a problem is to ask who profits from that problem, right? So if people don't want socialistic Medicare, you have to ask yourself, what's that about? Because insurance companies and the middlemen between those who actually do the work to save lives and make people healthy, there's a bunch of administrators that do absolutely nothing, and there's a bunch of profit makers who just make a lot of money. I mean, if you look at the entertainment industry, half of these managers that are talking about the actors' demands being too much are making their comments from their own private yachts. And they're so just completely oblivious about how that sounds. Which kind of brings us up to, like, why labor and union militancy is surging right now. And my feeling is like, if you're any student of history, right, it's because the gap between wealth, right? People who have so much, certainly obscene amounts of money that they could never spend for themselves or their children or their grandchildren in their lifetimes. And then there's people who have nothing. People with, you know, four or five or six or seven different houses, and people who are living on the street. You know, people who can fly themselves to the moon because they have so much money. And people who can't, you know, every day is a struggle. When you have a huge gap like that, it's natural that young people, you know, there was a new study that said something like young people, 80% of young people support unions right now. It's the highest, most positive ratings that the labor movement has had in a long time. It's because people see that, you know, you go to apply for a job and they want to pay you nothing, but they demand that you have an advanced degree. They demand an excessive amount of hours. And I think young people have seen that it's a shell game. Why should they you know, squander and waste their life making billions of profits so somebody can fly themselves to the moon, and they can't support their own family. They can't buy a house. They can't, you know, have health care.
Well, you know, you bring an interesting point, because I always think of it this way. You know, like I personally, on a personal letter, I like the capitalist system. I like that we can become innovative, we can become entrepreneurs and all that stuff. But what I don't like is there's no cap on how much money mm-hmm. you can have. To me, as long, you know, Eugenie Deb said an interesting quote. He says, as long as there is one man in prison, I am not free. And I say, as long as there's one high person or one child that's suffering, I am not free, because that child could be my child, that could be my home. Mm-hmm. You know, we think when things are okay with us, we think, oh wow, you know, everything's fine. We forget that it's not fine with everybody, and I think of ourselves also. You know, the thing that really clouds me is that on our money we say, in God we trust, and I think, well, wait a minute. You know, that's supposed to be, God's supposed to be about love and comparing and compassion and sharing. You know, how can we have that on our dollar bill when that dollar bill is not going to everybody fairly? I mean, it's just a thought that I have.
Well, some would say we don't actually, I mean, this capitalism is so unregulated
right
now that it's an oligarchy. It's not just, you know, if you look at what supposedly were the kind of rosy times post-war where, you know, wealthy were taxed at a much higher rate. And, you know, what we have is people making obscene amounts of money, not paying their fair share in taxes. So the burden, and the majority of the burden, tax burden, is going to working people and working class people, and they get very little for it.
Well, it's amazing. It really is. And people need to think, you know, one of the things that I learned a long time ago, one thing from my father, I remember I went shopping for my mother one day and I crossed a picket line and I came home and my father was sitting on a chair saying, where were you, young lady, today? He happened to see me. I said, well, I went to Ralph's. And he says, did you see those people out there? And he said, yeah. He said, that's a picket line. And he went on and on and on, showed me his clip in his head. And I swear to God, I never crossed. In fact, when Safeway was on strike in Los Angeles, I would not go to Safeway locally.
Right.
So it's very important. Well, we're coming to the end of our segment. It goes very, very fast when we're in this room. So there's two things that I would like you to address. One is that, you know, what is going on that you believe in the labor movement? Like you say, why is everybody being so attracted in it? And how can we support you, and any website that people can get a hold of you? Or how can we support the Nurses Union? And also the writers. How can people actually support these efforts?
Well, I think the thing that you hit on is that, you know, public support of you. Number one, never cross a picket line. There's nothing lower than anyone who crosses a picket line. Don't let your friends cross a picket line. Because
that's exactly my father's words. There's nothing lower than somebody who crosses a picket line.
That's what we say. Nothing lower than a scab. So, you know, you don't want to let your friends cross a picket line. You want to raise your kids not to cross a picket line. Because it's just like your dad told you, right? By the time people are out on a strike, they are putting their livelihood, they're putting their kids, their ability, their kids' food, their ability to pay rent, they're putting it all on the line because it's that important. And if you're not supporting that, you know, I mean, if you are supporting that, it's huge. It makes a big, big difference. And similarly, you know, when you see nurses rushing around in the hospital, it's because they don't have enough staff. When you, you know, see workers being exploited, you know, always side with the workers, right? Which side are you on? And I just want to put in a plug for a great documentary film that you should see, Elaine, if you haven't already. It's called it's Barbara Coppell, another great woman film documentary maker, and it's called Harlan County, USA, and
it's about that
strike. It's incredible. You'd love it. It's great. One of the best union films of all time. And it includes a version of that song sung, I think, by the author. And it's pretty amazing. But it shows the power of people being fed up and standing up. And it's such a beautiful thing to see, which is, I think, what we're seeing right now. The resurgence. And I really feel it for workers. You know, the CNA is a militant union. It's a large union. And it's a strong union. But what I see workers every day, whether it's at Starbucks workers, fast food workers, the Dunkin' Donuts workers who just walked out, all these workers are standing up, and it's just them. They don't have anyone behind them. So we need as consumers and as members of the community to always stand with workers.
Any website people can go or how they can get a hold of you, anything?
You know, I'm on Facebook. If anybody wants to talk, you know, grab me there, that's a good place, or Instagram. But I encourage everyone to go to the North Bay Labor Council. They, AFL-CIO, they did a great labor breakfast. Again, they do an amazing job of bringing all the unions in our county together and putting pressure on electeds to not just give lip service to policies that support workers, but to actually take actions that support workers. So NBLC, North Bay Labor Council, Google them, and they'll come up on Facebook as well.
Well, Lisa Maldonado, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing so much and for your passion and for all you do. Well, folks, that's it for our show. I want to thank Lisa Maldonado, who's a wonderful, wonderful person, a labor representative for the California Nurses Association. And if you're dealing with anything in the hospital or a nurse or any, just make sure that you give them a thank. A reminder, please tell your friends that Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. That's this evening. I'm so excited I get to listen to my own program. Also, I'm available for speaking engagements. And if you have any announcements like birthdays, anniversaries, anything that you had, please do not hesitate to email me at elainebholtz@gmail.com. And remember, I say this every single week. Our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that. You know, I'm watching my great-granddaughter, Satori, who's going to be 5 years old, growing up, and I'm seeing all it takes to raise a child, to invest in the children, because when you're investing in children, you're investing in the future. And to pay attention, if an organization is striking, don't pass that. Don't cross that picket line. Anyway, this is Elaine B. Holtz, and you've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
All the joy that is coming to you is not a woman in your life, but she's someone to pursue. She's patient and she's waiting, and she'll take you home now. The woman in your life, she can wait so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you. Because the woman in your life, the woman in your life, the woman in your life is
the previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, September 4th, 2023.